Hey, y'all. The Fallen Podcast is an Augusta University and Georgia Cyber Center production. Thanks for tuning in. Things are about to get wild.
Augusta University is proud to celebrate Black History Month. To celebrate, we want to take a moment to recognize student organizations that created Black history for the university. Omega Psi Phi Fraternity, Incorporated is the first international fraternal organization to be founded on a historically Black college campus. Omega Psi Phi was founded on November 17, 1911 at Howard University in Washington, D.C. From the initials of the Greek phrase meaning friendship is essential to the soul, the name Omega Psi Phi was derived. That phrase was selected as the motto. Manhood, scholarship, perseverance, and uplift were adopted as cardinal principles. The Omega Eta chapter of Omega Psi Phi was founded at Augusta University February 2nd, 1976.
Augusta University presents In the Wild, the podcast for all things Augusta University. With this week's Quick Jag, here's your host, Rayshawn Ricks.
What's up, y'all? Welcome back to In the Wild. And joining me in the studio is our amazing intern, Miss Ania. How's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
I'm good and tired. As you already know, I had a conference this week.
Right.
And I'm exhausted. I'm working off fumes like I'm on E.
Honestly, same. Like, this has been a really busy week for me because, you know, like, the first 2 weeks of school, it's like, hey, this is the syllabus. This is what you can expect. And now we're really getting to, like, the meat and potatoes of the course. So, like, the assignments are coming and rolling in. So I'm drinking a lot of coffee, but I'm going to start, you know, getting my 8 hours of rest, too, because, you know, being protective, got to get that rest in. So I'm going to do better with that.
What courses are you taking this semester?
Ooh, so public relations, advanced media writing, social media, and audience. I'm also taking a class for, it's like we write for the Augusta University student newspaper, The Bell Ringer.
Okay.
And then this internship kind of counts as a course.
Sure does.
So I'm taking 5 courses this semester.
Whew.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
It is. But I am pushing through because I graduate in December, so I'm just going to pray and do my best.
I mean, you seem to be doing great so far, but I know how basically everything can change from, like, the beginning of the semester toward, like, the middle and end. Like,
yes.
So much can. And it's crazy to think that we're already in February, because usually January is, like, a very slow month, but I feel like we just, like, breeze through January and, like, boom.
Yeah, January felt like it raced through, but then again, it felt like really long at the same time. So in February, it's already the 3rd. I kind of feel like February is going by fast too, but yeah, just taking it one day at a time.
Yeah, because this conference got me so tired. It was good though. Like, I was able to present about podcasting because our podcast is very unique in a lot of universities and institutions, even if they do have their toe dipped in podcasting, like, we are really one of the only universities that does what we do.
Yeah.
And kind of incorporate students and faculty, staff, alumni, and all in this big, wonderful project that I get to call my baby. So it was really fun to talk to people about that. I was in Atlanta for a few days. That was good. But it's time for our Jungle Reports, where we talk about all things happening on campus. So getting us started, which I think is really cool, because I always love talking about our awesome provost, because he's so much fun to work with. Dr. McKinnon has welcomed his first 2 provost faculty fellows, Drs. Vishal Arora and Dr. Amy Abduvovic Kui. I'm so sorry if I mispronounce either of y'all's names, will be the first 2 of his faculty fellows. And this program or fellowship is designed to provide AU faculty members with leadership and administrative experiences, so that way they can kind of just take on extra leadership experience and develop, like, a pipeline of our future academic administrators and leaders at the university. So that's really cool and interesting that we are growing, in a sense, to build up leaders, not just for students, but also for our faculty.
Yeah, I think that's amazing because I can honestly say that the faculty and staff here, the leadership with them already is already amazing. So I can't wait to see how this program is going to like further build their leadership, because like I've taken a leadership course here at Augusta, and that course really helped me, you know, helping me with where I am now. I think leadership is just important for anyone. It doesn't matter, you know, what career field you're in. Having basic leadership skills is just necessary nowadays. So I think this is going to be really awesome.
Yeah, and it's always great to be able to have your place of employment kind of pour into you because, I mean, you're not an employee yet. but, you know, like when you really work hard at something, which I know you can relate to this, but when, you know, really dive in and dedicate yourself and commit to something, like it's always great to see whatever entity that you're committed to kind of pour back into you and help you out, get to wherever you want to go. So yeah, shout out to y'all. And I hope they have an amazing experience with that fellowship. I'm curious to see how long it lasts, like if it's just for a semester or a year. But yeah, we'll keep our eyes and our paws on that thought. But what do you got?
Okay, so jumping into Augusta University communication students. So Carlos Rodriguez, I know him. We had a class together last semester. Okay. He is a junior communication student, and he definitely keeps himself busy on campus as he's a member of the men's cross country and track and field teams. And he's also the co-editor in chief of the Bell Ringer, which I'm a member of as well. But he's taken on a new endeavor, and he's taken on entrepreneurship. So Rodriguez has started his own company. It's called Crod Films, where he creates highlight reels for athletes, and his specialty is filming basketball. I think that's awesome. Like I went to my first basketball game this semester. It was the stadium basketball game, and I saw it was amazing. I loved it. It was so sweet. And I saw Carlos there, and I saw him filming, and he had this, like, I could tell it was a very expensive camera. So I know he's doing some great work. That's amazing, Carlos. Like, keep up the good work. Like, I can't wait to see, like, some of your highlights being on ESPN or even the NFL. Like, I'm rooting for you. Keep it up. And so, yeah, I think that's amazing. Like, entrepreneurship in college, like, that's a really big thing. Juggling classes and then, like, doing your own thing. Like, a lot of people talk about that, and it's really difficult. So, Carlos, keep it up. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah, I think that being able to get what I call co-curricular experiences while you're a college student are so important. And sometimes even more important than extracurricular, because you're able to take exactly what you're learning in class and turning it into something that's tangible and valuable, right? So hopefully his experiences in his communication courses can make him a better videographer, editor, and can just, you know, really make his business in filming just something that takes off even before he graduates. Because as someone who is a product of the comm department and in the comm field, if you don't have any published work when you graduate, it's going to be very difficult for you.
Yes.
And so that's one thing that with students working with me, like me working with you this semester, like I'm always pushing for like students to be able to have something that they can say, like, this is what I did, like this is mine, like, and it actually was published, it performed well. People were able to see it and, you know, give feedback on it, that type of thing, because that's super important. Right. And also shouting out Chris Rickardson and Shelby Summerlin.
Yes.
Those are two of Carlos's colleagues on the Bell Ringer, because they've been covering high school sports for the Augusta Press, which is a local online newspaper, which is super awesome too. Like being able to, like I just said, have those published works even before you graduate. So when you go out in the workforce, the job hunt, you're able to say, like, hey, I didn't just learn stuff, but I did stuff while I was on campus.
Yeah, because nowadays it's no longer just about your resume. Like, you can write a really awesome resume, but they want to know, well, what have you done while you were in college? Because, you know, everybody makes A's and B's. Everybody's part of these organizations, but they want to see your work. Like, what can you bring to our organization? So I think it's really awesome that these students, like Carlos, he's a junior. He's already doing it. He has another year to like add to his portfolio. So yeah. I think it's awesome. Like, you're doing it now. So, you know, I can't wait to see some of the work he's going to be doing his senior year. And also with Chris and Shelby, like, yeah, this is awesome. This is really awesome.
But I guess jumping into the health sciences side of things, AU's Molecular Medicine Graduate Program celebrates some new graduates. And they kind of, at this point, have their pick of job opportunities because Dr. Nada Abuela and Letty Caraballo Galva, once again, I'm so sorry if I butchered your names, say that they cannot wait to start their careers in helping patients by doing research. So this graduate program was established in 1997, so it's been around for a minute, and has the goal to prepare students for careers in basic and translational biomedical research by providing academic or advanced training in the genetic and molecular mechanisms underlying human diseases. So that's really, really fancy. Yeah. And they're, you know, they have their PhD. They had to complete a dissertation on original research. So I just kind of give my hats are off to anyone that can complete research. Like,
yeah.
Especially in the healthcare field, especially during the pandemic.
Yeah, because like, you know, I'm not really that knowledgeable in the healthcare field. I know my sister, she's a biology major. And so, like, I know, like, there were a lot of sleepless nights, a lot of full cups of coffee. So, yes, kudos to y'all. Like, I can't wait to see what the research brings forth as far as, like, finding cures for a lot of these diseases that people have been waiting for. So, like, shout out to y'all. Kudos to y'all, because I could never. I definitely could never.
There was a point in time where I thought I could. I remember way back when I was a pre-nursing major, which was my first semester here, and I took biology 1107. And I just went ahead and emancipated myself from the dreams of, you know, being in healthcare, which I always thought science was interesting. I've always been good at science. And even with biology 1107, came out with a C, because, you know, y'all know C's get degrees. but I just realized, like, I'm not as passionate about studying this. Like, I'm not really as interested in, like, doing the work to get a good grade in this class. And I don't want to be no C nurse. Like, I don't know. So I did myself and everybody else a favor and switched majors to communication.
You did everyone a favor.
Like, I mean, who wants to get the nurse that barely scraped by in undergrad?
Exactly. Because, like, I'm sorry. If you made C's, like, while you were in school, I don't want you operating on me. Like, do not cut me open. Let me get another doctor, somebody else, because, like, I need somebody who is passionate, ready to go. I don't need any mistakes while I'm under the knife. So kudos to y'all. I can definitely see the passion in this.
And I'm sure, like, we all, well, I can only speak for myself, but I've had experiences where I was in a doctor's office or receiving some sort of care, and you even if you didn't directly experience, but you would see, you know, like, someone that just was not passionate about their job. Like, yeah. They're wearing scrubs and they are here to, you know, be of service, but, you know, they're just not into it. and I didn't want to be that type of nurse. I don't want to have that type of nurse working on me, like you just said. So, yeah, I couldn't do it, but I have so much respect for everyone is able to do it, especially the ones who are able to do things like they did and complete research.
Yeah.
Because that's so important in all of the groundbreaking decisions from their research. So,
yeah, I wonder, like, what all goes into the research, and, like, how long does it, like, take you to do the research? Because, like, I hear all the time about dissertations, like, it takes, like, I guess months and months to do. So, like, that's a lot of time that you're spending, like, on the computer, talking to people, making sure everything is in check. So I don't know, like, that's amazing, but I can tell, like, yeah, the communication field is definitely for me. Definitely for me.
Yeah, I noticed like a big difference when I actually started getting into my major courses for communication and, you know, it switched from just completing tests, but to having projects. Like I've always been a very project oriented person. Like if you give me a problem to solve or something to do, like I can figure out how to do it and I can have fun while I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. But I can't have fun just studying something. Yeah. Like I'm not a fan of having to highlight paragraphs and textbooks and creating note cards. Like I'm just not that. I'm not that type of person. I've never really been. But if we can figure out how to make a project out of studying something, like I can do it and ace it every time. Like some of my favorite classes and experiences have been because there was a project attached to the class and I've been able to be creative about going about it.
Yeah, I think the main thing is just finding your passion, because like if you have a passion for something, that's what's going to drive you to do well in what you do. So, you know, I'm sitting here saying I can never do something like this, but these people, the reason why they can do it and the reason why they were so well at doing it is because they obviously had a passion for it. And I think that's just, passion is what's going to drive you to your success, because like I've noticed myself, things that I don't like doing, like the attitude I have towards it influences how well I do at it. So, you know, having a good attitude about it and then finding what you like really goes or plays into the formula of success.
Absolutely. And speaking of research and passions, we are going to talk to someone up next to talk a little bit about something that they are very passionate about. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Want a chance to win $5,000? Then sign up for the third annual Innovate competition. This year's challenge prompt is solving community needs. Significant social issues in the CSRA include homelessness, drug and alcohol abuse, lack of living wage jobs, lack of transportation, high cost of childcare, and difficulty recycling, among others. Each team will develop a practical solution to one of these community challenges and present it at the competition. The team with the best idea will win $5,000. The second place team will win $3,500. The third place team will win $2,500. And the honorable mention team will win $500. All prize money will be awarded via scholarship to support each student's journey to graduation. The competition will be held March 31st, 2022 at the Georgia Cyber Center. All Augusta University students are invited to participate. To learn more or to register for Innovate, visit augusta.edu/innovation/innovate.
Welcome back, y'all, to In the Wild. And joining us is our very special guest. He is a professor of infectious disease at the Medical College of Georgia, and he's here to talk to us a little bit about HIV, AIDS, and some other things. So give a warm welcome, a warm Jaguar welcome to Dr. Roger MacArthur. How's it going?
Going well, Rashawn. Nice to see you.
Thank you so much for being here. I know you are a very busy person, so I really appreciate you taking some time to talk to us. And just getting started, how did you become interested in researching and studying infectious diseases?
I've always had an interest since medical school, since about the first or second year of medical school, when we learned our microbiology. And I had the opportunity to work with an internationally known infectious diseases physician when I was a third-year medical student.
Oh, wow.
And it was just a chance encounter. It was the clerkship I was assigned to, Dr. George Gee Jackson. And really increased my interest in infectious diseases. Of course, that was back in the early 1980s, before really much was known about HIV. And I remember I was a second-year student when the first reports of unusual infections in men who had sex with men were showing up in the New England Journal of Medicine. No one at that time could imagine what an epidemic HIV would be. We didn't even know it was a virus. We didn't know back then it was an infectious agent, but it is, and we've come a long way since then, and we've come a long way since the late 80s when I was in fellowship training.
Gotcha. So how did that bring you to the Medical College of Georgia?
Well, I saw my first HIV-infected patient in 1985, and my first patient with HIV die of HIV-related complications in 1986. Finished fellowship training in Baltimore in 1988. And in the mid to late 80s, at least in Baltimore, that's when folks were getting really sick with HIV and they were being hospitalized. They'd gotten infected in the late 70s, early 80s, and now they're getting sick. And we didn't even have one drug to treat HIV until 1987. And one drug that we had when it came out was not enough. That was AZT or zidovudine. After I finished fellowship, I went on to an academic medical center in Ohio, was there for about 6 years. Went up to Detroit, was there at Wayne State University in Detroit at the Detroit Medical Center for about 20 years, and then was recruited to come here to Medical College of Georgia at Augusta University.
Awesome. And it seems like you've been able to, make an impact because you're recently awarded the Professionalism Award. So tell us a little bit about that and how did you feel?
I felt very, very good, but I felt very, very surprised. It was a complete surprise. I was
really?
Almost speechless. I was at the meeting or the dean's summary of what was going on at the medical college. Sitting in the audience, and all of a sudden there was a picture of me being shown, and he called me up on stage to give me the Professionalism Award, in large part because of the work that I've done, not with HIV, but with SARS-CoV-2, being available to the students, the medical students, 24/7, basically. So if they had questions about COVID-19, about getting tested, about what to do, they were told by the deans to give me a call, and I was happy to do it. And I had I played a small role in being able to make it safe to go back to in-person learning when we did that around July of 2020.
Oh, yeah, because that was still a very, scary time to think about being in person.
It was. We had limits. We limited elevators to two people. We made everybody stand 6 feet apart. We put tape over handles or the arms of chairs so as not to sit too close together. But we were successful. We were actually, along with the dental college, the first entities within the University System of Georgia to be allowed to return to in-person classes. And in fact, we were at MCG one of just a handful, 6 to 10 or so, medical schools around the U.S. that were allowed to open to in-person activities. And we kept it up. We kept it open, and we showed that it could be done safely.
That's awesome. And I'm sure all of the students really appreciated your work and commitment to them during, this time, because we're still in it a little bit.
I certainly do. And I have to wonder, so how was the experience? Because you talk about you worked with helping with students return back to campus. So how did you guys plan the protocols to go into place with returning back to campus?
We talked through it, those of us in infectious diseases. We talked with the deans about it, and we came up with guidance that was consistent with what the Georgia Department of Public Health had said, as well as what the CDC was saying. And we also looked at the ventilation within the Education Commons, did the same thing at the Dental College. And we found that the CDC had published guidelines for the minimum number of times per hour that air should be turned over. And we were 3 times higher than that. So we felt pretty good about the ventilation within the building. And we had that confidence that we could do so safely. Students coming back in 2020 were a little nervous. And I'm sure their parents were nervous as well. But we did it. We did see infections, but not within the Education Commons. It was community spread. Like all of us that go out from time to time, our students would go out and they would get exposed to it, and some tested positive. But we had in place a protocol that could manage that. We would then have them isolate at home. Back then, I think it was for 10 days. They would join the classes remotely, and then when they recovered, they'd come back. And we had contingency plans in case we had to go to all remote learning, but we didn't have to do that. We kept it open.
So switching gears a little bit, You wrote an article in Patient Care about ending the HIV pandemic. Could you share with our listeners about the 90-90-90 by 2020?
This was a plan that the UNAIDS group came up with in 2014. The idea was worldwide, they wanted to have 90% of all persons with HIV diagnosed with having HIV and get 90% of them on antiretroviral therapy and then get 90% of that group to undetectable. And undetectable means untransmissible. That was the goal. Plus, of course, for an individual who is undetectable, they're going to live longer and healthier and not spread the virus. That's the U equal U or undetectable equals untransmissible. Other countries did it. Botswana relatively quickly got 81%. So if you do the math first, 90-90 or 0.9 times 0.9 times 0.9, that's about 73%. Botswana was at 81%. The UK, about 87%. Here in the US, well, that number wasn't so good. It was only about 55%. And where we fell down was with retention in care. Very important concept. Before somebody can get undetectable, they have to be started on antiretroviral therapy, and they have to continue antiretroviral therapy. And the best way to do that is to have them return to clinic. Before they can even return to clinic, they have to be linked to care. Very important concepts. So now linkage to care is defined as getting somebody into a qualified facility with experience treating HIV within 30 days of the diagnosis, and retention in care essentially means getting two relevant lab tests done in the same calendar year. So where I practice at our Ryan White funded clinic, the Moore Building at Augusta University, our undetectable rate is 92%. Our retention and care rate is 80%. Around the US though, in 2017, the retention and care rate was only 58%. We need to be doing a lot better than that. And so very recently, the White House Office of AIDS National Policy came up with a new plan, a goal by 2030. And that goal includes diagnosing 95% of all those with HIV, increasing the use of pre-exposure prophylaxis. Very exciting news, there's a new long-acting injectable that has to be given every other month that will really help. It's been shown in several countries in Africa to really make a difference, getting 99% of persons safe so they don't get HIV, even if risk behavior continues. And basically dropping the number of new infections in the U.S. from a baseline of 37,000 per year, which is where we are now, by 75%. So getting that number down to under 10,000. And it's going to take a lot of work. It's going to be a pretty heavy lift with all the other epidemics that are going on, not just COVID-19, but various sexually transmitted infection epidemics, including syphilis and gonorrhea. And we are here in the Southeast at the epicenter of a whole bunch of sexually transmitted disease infections.
Oh, wow. And you mentioned that we have the tools to end this, I guess, HIV pandemic. So what are the tools, and in your experience, how can we use them to protect ourselves?
We have PrEP. Again, that stands for pre-exposure prophylaxis. What was found when we only had pills for PrEP is that folks, well, kind of got tired of taking a pill a day, and so they just didn't. And of course, if you don't take the medicine, you're not protected. And then we found that another way to protect folks was to get those who are infected. PrEP is for those who are not infected. A way to get folks who are infected not to transmit it is to get them to take these medications, the antiretrovirals. They've made a lot of advances in those. There are combination pills. They have more than one medication in the pill. They're very, very potent, and they're very well tolerated. And even better, one pill once a day. The newer ones can be taken with food or on an empty stomach, essentially side effect free. But we have to get folks to keep taking them, and we have to make sure that they come back to clinic. So we have to make the clinics a welcoming place. At our clinic, we have dental services, we have women's health services, we have psychology services, we have pharmacy services. We'll soon have our own freestanding pharmacy there, and we'll soon have dental services as well. Sort of one-stop shopping as a way of making all of our patients feel welcome and feel that we're looking after their total health. Not just the HIV, but some very important other aspects like blood pressure, like diabetes. We're funded to do HIV work, but we are also able to address other health concerns that the patients have and are concerned about.
You know, I like that, having a one-stop place for health needs, because when you talk about HIV and AIDS, there's a big stigma around that. And so having a clinic that makes people feel welcome, I think that also can contribute to bringing these HIV and AIDS cases down, making them feel welcome and inclusive and not just excluded.
Absolutely. I think that's an excellent point. Our building is new. It's been open for a little more than a year. It's a gorgeous facility. We even have a little area for kids. Awesome. They can sit with furniture that's appropriate for kids, their size, that is, little playscapes or the equivalent. So patients can bring their kids in, have them wait in the waiting area, know that they're safe, and feel good about being in a brand new building.
Are there any specific populations impacted by this disease more than other groups?
Absolutely. African Americans, especially African American males, are now accounting for every year, at least African Americans are, both men and women, over 50% of new infections. And if we look at risk behavior, it is predominantly men who have sex with men, regardless of race. 80% of new infections every year are in the group of men who have sex with men. And many of them are not using protection. And we are hoping that by increasing the use of PrEP, and colleagues of mine are really working hard to ramp up our own PrEP efforts to get more individuals aware of the access, or make them aware of the concept of PrEP and get them access to it. And of course, if they are already infected, get them to realize the importance of taking these medications to not only help themselves, but to prevent the spread to others.
So last question before I let you go, where can our listeners go to learn more about the Ryan White Clinic?
They would go to basically AU, look up Ryan White Clinic, or go to AU and look up the Moore Building to get the telephone number. If they want to make an appointment, they can do that. If they want to get a tour of the facility, there'll be somebody there that will tell them what's involved and how to do that. And we're happy for anybody to come who is interested in being there, either as a patient or as a visitor. We'll treat you really well.
Thank you so much for being here, and I hope everyone listening feels a little bit more informed about this disease and how you can help yourself and share this information with others so we can all stay protected.
Thank you very much.
If you have ever wanted to get hands-on with electronics, field biology, 3D printing, biochemistry, or other STEM-related activities, this is your chance. All AU students can participate in pop-up workshops. Opportunities for real-life application of STEM concepts and skills offered outside of the classroom, hosted by our own AU experts. In the past, Dr. Andy Hogger presented workshops covering the basics of computer programming, Arduino microcontrollers, tiny computers called Raspberry Pi, soldering, and much more. Other workshops led by chemists Dr. Panda, Maury, and yours truly, Dr. Spencer, uncovered the basics of bioinformatics, drug design, and enzymatic assays. We also have other STEM-related workshops covering a variety of mathematics and biology topics, in addition to workshops on careers in STEM, how to get involved in undergraduate research, and more. Don't miss out on this opportunity to learn skills that can help you navigate your STEM classes and prepare you for an exciting career in STEM. This is all possible based on funding from the National Science Foundation. Pick out the workshops that you are interested in by visiting our website today.
Thanks for listening to In the Wild. If you like what you heard, then give a nice rating and review to this podcast on whatever you use to listen to your podcast. To keep our conversations going, follow In the Wild on Instagram at In the Wild Pod and Augusta University on all social media platforms. Don't forget to follow me, your host, Rayshawn Ricks, at Rayshawn Ricks, to send me questions you want to see answered on the show. Tune in for new episodes every week because we don't want you to miss a single thing that's happening on campus. You can also find out more news at jaguar.augusta.edu. Until then, I'll see y'all next time. Stay wild.